Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 112, we discuss our thoughts on TNT's Champions League coverage, whether the days of the Gold Cup as a tournament are numbered, which US soccer commentator has joined the Bundesliga world feed, the Champions League gets CONCACAF'd by Yahoo Sports, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Now, what makes us do this podcast and every week? For me, and also working on World Soccer Talk, the website 7 days a week, it's two reasons, really. One is to make it as easy as possible to find out how, when, and where to watch soccer on US TV and on online. And two, it's to make connections with fellow soccer fans from around the world, and particularly the United States, like you, the listener. For me, my family, and Kartik, we eat, live, and breathe soccer 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and that is no exaggeration. So in the past, I've had opportunities to work for Fox Sports and NBC, but I honestly wouldn't swap any of those gigs for this one right here. I love it so much, and I love connecting with you, the listeners. So thank you for listening, and for those who've never listened before, we dive deep into the soccer media industry, talking about the games that we love, talking about some of the changes that are happening in the industry in terms of television options, streaming options, as well as some of the politics. Some of the politics are things that are driving changes in the sport. And as a result of those politics, oftentimes we, the soccer fans, things change. Things change all the time. Now, Kartik, talking about change, I'm not sure if you had a chance this past week to watch TNT's Champions League coverage, and if you saw or thought about any changes that you witnessed this past week.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of back to basics, Chris, for TNT in terms of just cold hard analysis, more look at tactics, the features, like the EA Sports feature made more sense because that corresponds to Bleacher Report Live and TBS. They didn't really talk about TBS, but TBS will be showing some of those esports competitions with FIFA later in the year. I thought it was less clunky. It was more consistent. The post-match show on Wednesday in particular, which I will admit I just watched because I had it's all kinds of U.S. domestic soccer stuff to deal with on Wednesday and on Tuesday for that matter, I thought was actually pretty good. Steve Nash hosting. They were all in one location. That was a big part of, I think, maybe it being less clunky. And there was more of a focus on analysis, kind of breaking down what happened in certain moments in a match. And I thought that was quite good. And that Steve Nash had a good week. Maurice Adu, as he's now going by, on TNT had a good week. And Tim Howard, as usual, was good. Now, this presenter role between Nash and Kate Abdo, Kate Abdo was better this week, but there were a couple still little awkward moments with her hosting. I think maybe trying to be too light, maybe too casual. Nash seems to be getting the presenter thing down, but he still also has those sort of moments. But it was much better. I was pleased with TNT this week. I thought that they took to heart the critiques maybe on this show and from a lot of fans on social media and in other mediums in the last week and quickly tweaked and made adjustments, which is very different than Fox. One other note, comparing them to Fox, that post-game show on Wednesday, the Tuesday one was pretty good too, but the post-game show on Wednesday was delved into the kind of analysis you would really never get on Fox after a round of 16 tie, or in terms of the way they broke down Manchester City and Schalke and the way they broke down the Atleti, the 2-8 goals for Atleti against Juventus. So I think having the full block of a half an hour for the post-game, and then now co-locating everybody in the same place has elevated them beyond what Fox gave us in the 9 years they broadcast this competition.
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster of a ride, Kartik, watching the Champions League on TNT this season. I mean, last podcast we were talking about, I was kind of saying to the point of, I've almost given up on watching the pregame show just because it was so bad. And up until now, I think TNT has been trying too hard to be different. This week, they went back to the basics and showed a lot of promise, really, that focuses on what they're good at, which centers around the tactical analysis from people such as Stu Holden. Both Tuesday's and Wednesday's broadcast went straight into with the tactical analysis, and it was nonstop tactical analysis. It almost felt like they took the training wheels off Stu Holden and said, okay, Stu, do your thing. And it was really good. It was some really great insights, some good discussions between Mo and Tim Howard and Steve Nash. You mean a couple of tiny flubs, but for the most part, it was really, really good. On the highs, the one studio makes so much of a difference. This week, they went to La La Land, to Los Angeles, and recorded both the Tuesday and Wednesday shows from Los Angeles. That was not a result of this podcast, I'm told. It was more something that had been in the plannings for quite a while in terms of having those folks in the LA area anyway, so they went ahead and did it there. But it was so much better. It was completely different in terms of, I mean, the chemistry was better. There wasn't the awkward switching back and forth. It felt like a more of a real good show. Stu Holden on Wednesday, the hosting, I thought did really, really well. And this is no offense to Kate, but I didn't really miss her on the set on Wednesday. Stu, I thought, held his own and did a really good combo between hosting but also giving his tactical analysis. The transitions were really good. Yeah, I think some of his best work was this week. The one part, Kartik, that I must say, which was completely floored me, was the best tactical breakdown I've ever seen, honestly, I've ever seen on a tactics board. And this was before the Liverpool-Bayern game. And this was by Stu Holden, where he got up from his seat and went over to the tactics virtual board and went ahead and looked at Bayern and Liverpool and how they were matching up. And a lot of the one-on-one matchups between the players and kind of the main parts of the pitch where there's going to be the real battles that would determine this game. And I thought he did an outstanding job at that. I thought that was absolutely amazing. Weston McKennie, they had the interview with him pre-match on Wednesday. That was great. We had post-match interviews with managers and players. The one with Raheem Sterling on Wednesday was great. And also the E-League segments, the FIFA video game segments, I thought were fun. All in all, what a difference a week makes. But a few of the lows, there were some technical issues with the Fernando Perez segment on Tuesday, and that's always one of our favorites. This one was, the audio went out, and they had the music playing in the background. That was unfortunate. They had a graphic on Wednesday that had some of the players playing in Germany that are U.S. men's national team players, and they had John Brooks listed as Josh Brooks. So that's kind of an embarrassing mistake there. The biggest low for me was the Greg Berhalter interview with Steve Nash asking a question about basketball. I think Steve was trying to be funny, but it didn't come off that well. And I don't know, Kartik. Greg Berhalter, I'm sure, is a good coach, and I'm hoping that he does well with the U.S. men's national team. But I can't remember the last time there was a U.S. coach, men's coach, that is such a boring interviewee. And this is not part of his job requirement by any means. I was thinking, going back through the U.S. men's national team coaches, full-time coaches, maybe Bob Gansler, but maybe Bob Gansler was more interesting or more charming than Greg. But Greg, this is the second interview I've heard him from Fox and now through TNT. But he's doesn't like to talk much and very, very boring.
So and actually on Berhalter, he was a horrible interview as a player. So I had hoped that, you know, he's older now, has a different role. He would be kind of more interesting. I know U.S. soccer wants to get away from the Bruce Arena type who is confrontational with the press. Klinsmann, too, right? Those last two U.S. managers were very quotable, but they've gone to the opposite extreme with this one in terms of just his media presence. I completely agree.
Yeah, and I just hope that TNT sticks to this kind of game plan because in terms of the strategy of what they've been doing, focusing on what they're good at, and like you said, Kartik, going back to the basics, but what a difference this week compared to last week. Now, I know you've had a busy week, Kartik, in terms of the kind of getting ready for the domestic league, as well as a lot of things happening kind of locally here in the Fort Lauderdale area in terms of soccer. Any other games or any other broadcasts that stood out for you from this past week, or did you have a match of the week that you saw?
Well, I only watched two other matches this week, which outside the Champions League, which were the Dortmund Augsburg game and the Schalke. Schalke was in the Champions League, and the Chelsea Manchester United game. That match was actually fairly entertaining. Martin Tyler and Stuart Robson were calling it. I miss Stuart Robson on Premier League broadcasts. You hear him on Champions League. You occasionally hear him on Bundesliga matches. You occasionally hear him on the World Feed for Serie A matches. If you catch the right one, you catch the right Bundesliga match. FA Cup, League Cup, you never hear him on the Premier League anymore. I think that is a huge loss for the league. I know when I tweeted that, Chris, lot of anger. He continues to be an incredibly polarizing figure. I mean, you and I talked about this years ago with NBC even, and we've talked about it with other people in the business about how he just seems to conjure up emotions on both sides. But I think it's a pretty big miss for the Premier League, and thoroughly enjoyed his commentary, and the pairing with Martin Tyler is very good.
Yeah, Stuart Robson, it's one of those things that you would think that by now a lot of Arsenal fans would forgive him or give him, you know, say, okay, that was fine. That was like during the Wenger years. And a lot of the things that Stuart Robson said were accurate. There were definitely the criticisms of Arsenal under Wenger. If you're an Arsenal fan, kind of a true-blooded Arsenal fan, yeah, those are going to hurt. Those are going to sting. But to me, he was right. And to me, just even outside of the whole Arsenal thing, he is one of the best co-commentators in the business. Gets a lot of work from around the world, but not a lot of Premier League matches, hardly any Premier League matches. And like you said, Kartik, we get to hear him on whether it's FA Cup or Serie A, Major League Soccer, if you're in England watching some of the games on Sky, you name it, pretty much. And the World Cups, of course, does a lot of work for ESPN in the United States. Pretty much anywhere, everywhere, and anywhere, except for the Premier League, and it's such a shame. But at least here in the US, we get to listen to him quite often. Whichever league you watch, except for the Premier League.
Yeah, he actually does some MLS games when he comes over also. Yeah. So he does, for whatever reason, I don't know if Premier League Productions has taken the decision because of all of the negative comments from Arsenal fans and a few others, or if there's something else there. But for whatever reason, the league that he probably is most connected to is the league he doesn't call matches from. It's bizarre.
Yeah, and it might be one of those things, kind of an old boys club too, where he's burnt a bridge for whatever reason within the Premier League or within the world feed there, and maybe that's why they're resisting having him commentate games that have nothing to do with Arsenal, which is, again, yeah, it is perplexing, but yeah. As far as the match of the week, Kartik, out of all the games I watched, two of my kids were playing travel soccer in the Western Cup in South Florida. So between the entire weekend, I think we had about 8 games being played, or actually 7 games played. So it's running all over the place. But I did get a chance to watch a lot of the FA Cup. It was a pretty uneventful FA Cup weekend, except for the Chelsea Man United first half. It was really entertaining, as well as the Swansea Brentford second half. It was really entertaining. But other than that, the FA Cup was a bit of a miss. Which is okay. It's not meant to be. They're not playing the games for entertainment. They're playing the games to win. But the match for me, which was my standout match of the week, was Schalke against Manchester City. This one was not on TNT. It was on Galavision or BR Live. But what a great game. I mean, Tony Jones and Ray Houghton commentating. This game had everything from controversial calls, referee mistakes. You had VAR. You had a great comeback from Manchester City. And, of course, a beautiful free kick by Leroy Sané against his old team, Schalke.
Which, by the way, I have to mention, mm-hmm. and I I didn't do this on Twitter. I'm trying to be good about this. I missed because of BR Live. So I'm sitting at my desk. I just come out of a meeting where the game was actually on in the background on Galavision. I came back to my desk. I had my iPad, and BR Live froze. And then I tried to reactivate it, couldn't, tried to log out of it, had the same problem. Finally, it resolved itself 3 or 4 minutes later, and I saw the score was 2-2. Now, it did hold then through the Sterling goal, so that was fine. But just there seems to be technical problems with Bleacher Report Live, BR Live, that pop up from time to time at kind of random in random times that I just don't have with the ESPN Plus thing. Now, I've heard other people have issues with ESPN Plus at times. I've heard people even have problems with DAZN, which surprises me because I think they have pretty high-end technology. NBC has – I've had problems with NBC Sports Gold as much as BR Live, so it's not to pick on BR Live. They're not the only ones. But it was just the worst time.
Yeah, it's nature of the beast, unfortunately, and it's one of those things that – so I was watching BR Live, and I was watching the game at the same time that you were, in a different location, of course. And for me, I had no problems with the video, so the stream was okay. Not to say that – I mean, there's so many different variables it could be, and it could be – it could be internet connections, it could be – this. I mean, but overall, kind of over the past year – I would agree, Kartik, in terms of I've had issues too with BR Live kind of freezing, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, what's going on? Like, is it me? Is it the internet? Is it my browser? Is it, you mean, there's so many different things that could happen or be causing that. But that's definitely unfortunate. It never fails, though, too. When things like that do happen, it seems to happen at the most inopportune time, where you're like, you mean, a player's breaking down the wing. It looks like he's going to cross the ball in for a goal, and then it buffers. Or you know, or freezes, whatever it may be. But I hate that. All right, well, we want to welcome back our advertiser SeatGeek, who is back for 2019 to sponsor the World Soccer Talk podcast. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated, with hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability. It's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. SeatGeek helps pull millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Now, SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever by searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value. SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Now, I actually have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. This past week, I used the actual SeatGeek app to look for tickets to a concert in Miami near me. Duran Duran were in concert. Don't mock me. Yeah, I'm a big Duran Duran fan from the 80s. They still got it, and they're still touring. They're still releasing albums, but don't hold that against me. But I used it to go ahead and kind of check that out. And it's really an easy app to use to look for tickets and to find some great deals. So best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code WSTPOD today. That's promo code WSTPOD, one word, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. They have the tickets. All right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news. And this is a big one.
Yeah, there's a lot of big news this week, although I'm kind of curious, where was this Duran Duran concert?
At the Jackie Gleason Theater in Miami Beach, next to the convention, at the Fillmore, right there on the convention center.
I need to use the app, and this is a good plug for me because I might have gone if I had known.
Oh, man, so, could have gone together.
Mark me as a fan of 80s punk rock also, although, you know, I'm more a 60s and 70s classic rock guy, but I can do Duran Duran and Tears for Fears and those groups too. So
all right, I'll keep an eye out for that next time they come to town.
Great. Thank you, Chris. So, yeah, as you said, some very big news this week. At this past weekend's USSF AGM in Scottsdale, Arizona, USSF President Carlos Cordero announced that there will be no more Confederations Cup in the future, which was something that's been speculated about a great deal. He also added, and that's maybe why FIFA's talking about the FIFA Nations League, he also added that the 2019 and 2021 Gold Cups may be the last ones ever for the CONCACAF regional tournament. Now, I've actually spoken to people, CONCACAF is based in Miami. I've actually spoken to some of the people on background. They were stunned by this. I can't express in how many words how shocked they were that Cordero stepped out on and said this. Now, they've given a formal response. I'll read that and I'll give you a little more explanation from what I've learned. Their formal response was, following recent media reports, CONCACAF clarifies that it is fully committed to the CONCACAF Gold Cup and confirms the 2019, 2021, and 2023 editions are part of the FIFA calendar. Additionally, once the new FIFA calendar is produced after 2023, CONCACAF will continue organizing the pinnacle event of our confederation. The caveat I'm going to give on that, well, no caveat, that's accurate from what I understand, is that maybe Cordero was confused because for 2024, there are conversations that are seemingly at a fairly advanced stage, maybe not that advanced, but they're not just in the preliminary stages with CONMEBOL about doing something similar to the Copa America Centenario again in 2024 and making that a regular fixture 24, 28, 32 on into the future in that year where the Euros are at the same time. That year where the Gold Cup is not played and Copa America, the traditional Copa America is not played, some sort of new tournament. It would not be called Copa America. It would be something co-branded with both confederations, making very clear it's a continental or a hemispheric championship. The thinking is maybe Cordero was confused because there have been discussions about that. But otherwise, just absolutely incredulous would be the way I would describe the reaction to this. He made a big mistake and put his foot in his mouth, the USSF president.
He definitely overstepped his boundaries in terms of saying some things that maybe were probably too early to actually be talking about it. But for me, though, too, I don't think he was confused, Kartik. I mean, again, Carlos Cordero, in terms of as USSF president, has given very, very few interviews, done very, very few press conferences. So we don't really know kind of what the individual, if he's very calculated about what he says, or if sometimes he goes off script and kind of says some things that maybe he shouldn't have done, or says some things and gets confused easily. We don't really know, at least I don't know, kind of what type of individual he is. But from a kind of a U.S. men's national team perspective, what he says makes total sense to me. I mean, the Gold Cup is a tournament. Yes, it's important to CONCACAF. But with the changes that are happening, where the Confederations Cup is no more, that means in terms of what's the incentive to actually go ahead and win the Gold Cup, other than to gain experience, other than to sell tickets, other than to have your team get some playing time together. I mean, before in the previous years, it would have been, okay, win the Gold Cup. Now you advance to the or have an opportunity to advance to the actual Confederations Cup. So from a USSF perspective, I think Cotero is making the right call and saying, hey, I mean, we're probably thinking about not even participating in the Gold Cup in the future. Well, actually, what he's saying is there would not be a Gold Cup, which are from CONCACAF's perspective, now the Gold Cup is, I mean, the pinnacle tournament in the region. It's a tournament that gives opportunities for a lot of the Caribbean countries, a lot of countries within CONCACAF, an opportunity probably to make some money for them. It's valuable for them. It's like, it's almost like the World Cup, because a lot of these teams, you mean, are too small or don't have the resources or not good enough to actually make it into the World Cup. So a lot of confusion coming out of this. Instead of the Confederations Cup, there will be an intercontinental playoffs to decide the final countries to advance to the 48 World Cup tournaments, presumably starting in 2022, if FIFA approves the 48 World Cup proposal next month at the FIFA Council. So there's a lot to take in here, Kartik, but to me, I think the Gold Cup will go on, whether the U.S. men's national team decides to be a part of that. And if they do become a part of that, maybe do they play a C team? Do they really put any effort into this one? We'll have to wait and see. What I would say, one more thing to add to this, is that if I'm Fox Sports or I'm Univision, I'm extremely upset at Cordero in terms of saying some of these remarks, because, I mean, they have the rights to the Gold Cup. In many ways, to me, it devalues the... why watch? It devalues this summer's Gold Cup. Why tune in and watch this one, and why get into it, and why get passionate about it if you know that effectively it's meaningless?
Yeah. So another point on this, what you mentioned about Cordero is absolutely correct. The approachability of Sunil Gulati versus Carlos Cordero is night and day. One of the problems with Sunil Gulati's governing style is that he was very arbitrary in what he did, and he talked a lot to the media. So he would announce things that caught people off guard in the U.S. Soccer Federation. He was very approachable. I even had a conversation with someone who was at the AGM this weekend who said, you know, previous years, Sunil, he'd be popping into the council meetings, interacting with the youth soccer reps and the adult soccer reps. He'd be down at the bar area, mingling with the attendees who were just, you know, grassroots soccer people. Cordero this year, didn't see him until... You know, we had to see him at the board meeting and at whatever else, you know, functions he was required at. So very different governing style, but you might be right. Cordero, because of that, is very deliberative in what he says. Gulati was very much shoot from the hip at times. And maybe this was by design, because you're right. If there is no Confederations Cup berth on the line, from the U.S. perspective, the playing perspective, the tournament's completely devalued. That's been the thrust of why the U.S. has constantly wanted to win the Gold Cup, right? Was to qualify or have a chance to qualify for the Confederations Cup. It's still important for revenue. It's very important for the revenue of those Caribbean nations. Mm-hmm. But maybe you're right. Maybe he did not speak out of turn, or this was a deliberate attempt to put some pressure on CONCACAF or on FIFA, because yeah, you're right. There's really no value to the tournament if there isn't something it leads to, because CONCACAF, you know, for no insult, is CONCACAF. It's not UEFA. It's not CONMEBOL.
At the same time, though, too, that the USSF will want to maintain a good relationship with CONCACAF. It sounds like they're definitely siding more with CONMEBOL in terms of maybe. I mean, maybe having discussions, we don't know. I mean, this is just kind of me thinking out aloud. But maybe having conversations or having discussions about, hey, wouldn't it be great in the future to have CONMEBOL teams play against the U.S. and Mexico, maybe Canada, and have, you mean, kind of the Copa Centenario, but under a different name, like you said, Kartik, and thinking along those lines more. But CONCACAF is important, a part of this, because, you mean, if FIFA ever came in and said, you know what, rather than having CONCACAF and CONMEBOL, let's just join those confederations together and just have one that represents all of North America and South America, which would be a nightmare for the U.S. men's national team, because in terms of qualification, it would make it much more difficult, and also devalues the weight of soccer in North America. There's a lot of ways this can go, but my guess is that USSF will hope that, at some opportunity, probably in the near future, we'll get an interview and we'll probably talk about this in a little bit more detail. And maybe Cordero says, yeah, I kind of spoke out of turn, but I was confused. And yeah, everything's nice with CONCACAF, but secretly and kind of like reading between the lines, they have to be thinking about ways to become stronger as a soccer nation, and playing in the Gold Cup where there's no incentive to really win it other than to get a trophy, devalues the strength of the team too, as well as the TV ratings and lack of interest in that tournament. So a lot to go on here. Now, Kartik, a story that we've been talking about for a few weeks, covering off and on as developments happen, is the whole story about this pirate network in Saudi Arabia called BeOutQ, which is streaming all of the sports from that come out of Qatar from beIN Sports. So everything from soccer, you name it, any major soccer league in the world, to Olympics, to golf, you name it. And it's undermining beIN Sports in Qatar, and it's undermining Qatar. Well, a new development is that the U.S. government has been urged to take action against Saudi Arabia as a coalition of sports and entertainment bodies demand the end of BeOutQ. a host of leading U.S. sports and entertainment bodies, trade associations, and international broadcasters have made submissions to the U.S. government demanding action against Saudi Arabia for its most sophisticated pattern of broadcast piracy that the world has ever seen. And what BeOutQ is doing is on a massive global scale in terms of trying to make sure that trying to promote illegal streaming, trying to promote illegal TV streams, and undermining not only being sports but also for Qatar and all the sport coming out of that country from the broadcasters. The interesting thing about this to me, Kartik, well, that's interesting, but the other interesting development is that part of the associations that went ahead and urged the U.S. government to take action against Saudi Arabia included an organization called the Sports Coalition in the U.S., which includes the six major U.S. sports leagues, so NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, the NCAA, and then the U.S. Tennis Association. The one league that's not included in this and is not a member of the Sports Coalition is MLS, which is strange that, I mean, you got all these major leagues from around the world, I mean, from the U.S., all these major leagues from the U.S., and they have joined the Sports Coalition and going out hard against Saudi Arabia in this case and BeOutQ and filing this with the U.S. government, but MLS is not one of them, which I find very, very strange. All right, Kartik, let's move on to this one's some great news for the U.S.
Yeah, Ian Choi has joined the Bundesliga World Feed analyst rotation. He made his debut on the World Feed this past weekend of Saturday's Hertha Berlin-Werder Bremen match, as well as Sunday's broadcast of Bayer Leverkusen and Fortuna Dusseldorf that was shown live on Fox Soccer Plus. Joy traveled to Germany to call the games from stadiums to a worldwide audience, including the U.S. audience when they pick up the World Feed. Quite honestly, this will be hit or miss with Fox viewers because in many cases Fox broadcast or has their commentators in L.A. speaking, broadcasting, and does not carry the World Feed. So beware of that.
Yeah, but a great appointment for Ian Choi, and congratulations on getting that that role, which is going to be great. I think it's going to help him considerably. And he's a fantastic co-commentator, too. So bad news for Dish Network, who lost 334,000 TV subscribers in the fourth quarter of 2018. This was the same quarter that Dish dropped Univision Deportes Network from its channel lineup. When asked why there was such a huge drop-off in subscribers, Dish mentioned Univision Deportes Network as a significant factor, as well as losing HBO. The fourth quarter loss of 334,000 subscribers follows a similar loss in the Q3, when 367,000 additional subscribers left the cable, the satellite TV provider. And if matters couldn't get any worse for Dish, the Dish CEO, Erik Karlsson, said that he wouldn't advise investors that the company is done experiencing customer loss due to the Univision networks. So it looks like it's going to be more subscribers leaving that network because of no soccer and no Univision there. So Univision projects it will account for more than half of all soccer viewership in the U.S. in 2019, regardless of language, which just goes to show not just the amount of soccer Univision shows, but in terms of the viewership that it gets for everything from Liga MX to Bundesliga to MLS, etc. And despite all of this, Dish Network continues to stubbornly refuse to add Univision Deportes Network back to its programming, which is absolutely insane. All right, Kartik, some more big news?
Yeah, we have a lot of broadcast news in the U.S., interestingly, this week. One, the CONCACAF Champions League English language rights have gone to Yahoo Sports Streaming, and that already started with the matches on Tuesday and Wednesday in the CONCACAF Champions League. And my understanding from CONCACAF is that they're very happy with that it gives them a bigger window and more exposure. ESPN Plus has picked up USL League One, which is the new Division III league that is being run by USL, who also runs the championship, the second division league, and one of the fourth division leagues in the country, USL League Two. It's actually one of two third divisions of the league. We've just had a new one sanctioned this week. Also, some news about NWSL that we'll get to in a few minutes, but just just as a preface to that, they will also be on Yahoo Sports this week, this year. And I believe there may have been one or two other soccer moves by Yahoo Sports in the last few weeks. We'll find that out and obviously report on it next week.
Yeah, Yahoo Sports, from what I've heard this week, they had quite a few issues with streaming, with just even buffering or not working or kind of a buggy app. I didn't get a chance to test it out and watch it, but that's what I heard. In regards to other streaming news, the Chilean League and the Chilean Cup have moved. So they were previously through Fanatis in the United States, and now they have been acquired by DAZN. So another couple of rights there that DAZN have picked up. They also have the J League as well as the Asian Champions League. And Kartik, some more news?
Yeah, so that NWSL issue I teased a few minutes ago, they have ended their partnership with A&E Networks, who were also an equity partner in the league. And the matches will no longer be on Lifetime this season. And although Lifetime will remain as a sleeve sponsor for the league, that's just a way to see this thing out. It was a 3-year deal, Chris, and only 2 years were fulfilled. I don't want to get into it. It's kind of extraneous to the media thing, although now maybe it applies to the media thing. There has been all kinds of intrigue within NWSL this offseason. Lots of just things happening within the league. The league is still going to play this season, thankfully, but there's strife among owners, really kind of questions about the direction of the league, U.S. soccer's commitment to the league, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a World Cup year in the women's game. So none of this is good. For now, the NWSL will appear on Yahoo Sports. That's what they announced as a result of this A&E partnership breaking off. Our friend Jonathan Tannenwald, Philly Inquirer, reports that they might be in negotiations with a couple other networks for a showcase match, much like they had on Lifetime. But for now, off television, NWSL Media will continue to operate. That was a collaboration between A&E and NWSL, but now that's going to be totally in-house with NWSL, and they will be on Yahoo and not on Lifetime. So a big, big change, and quite frankly, not a good change from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, lots of open questions about that, Kartik. And again, NWSL in a transition year in terms of broadcasting. Hopefully it's for the best. So last item in the news section is La Liga chief Javier Tebas has emerged as a contender for the Premier League chairman role to succeed Richard Scudamore. This one comes as a surprise, just because Tebas, although he's accomplished a lot, is very volatile, very outspoken, not the type of individual you would imagine at the Premier League, so we'll have to wait and see.
Next section is TV ratings, Chris, and we don't have that much data for this week. Obviously, the FA Cup matches were on ESPN Plus, so that doesn't register, and don't have many other telecasts to look at. But 453K last week for Manchester United PSG on TNT. I believe that's the highest number they've had on TNT thus far for the Champions League. And 271,000 for Spurs Dortmund. That was last Wednesday on TNT.
Yeah, and we'll have all of the numbers either this week or next week, but there were some big numbers from Liga MX, but we don't have them ready right now, but we should have them today, and we'll post those again either this week or next week on worldsoccertalk.com. Listener mailbag, we've got a ton of letters this week, so thank you everyone who sent these in. First up is from JP. He says, great podcast last week, maybe the best since I started listening this summer while trying to find any developments on the US rights for Serie A. First off, TNT, I'm at work during the Champions League game, so I've never seen their pre-game. However, often get home in time for the post-game and just want to see the second half highlights I missed during the commute. That's it. Instead, we get inane banter. When they actually do show highlights, they're almost always talking among themselves instead of setting up the clip. With beIN Sports no longer showing the extra on Tuesday through Thursday because of scheduling conflicts, we're missing a great source of highlights and analysis on Champions League days. Can you ask your contacts at beIN to have a 10 p.m. edition on those days? It doesn't even have to be live. So before I go on to read JP's second point, two things on that. One is that I believe the studio that beIN Sports uses during the week, so kind of the Tuesday through Thursday, is being used by somebody else, so they don't have access to that studio. But what I would recommend is ESPN FC. ESPN FC from this past weekend, too, with me traveling around kids' travel soccer games, has become really the must-go-to place to kind of get not just the analysis, but also the highlights. And so for Champions League days, definitely a good place to go to. If they still show the Champions League highlights, though, Kartik, do you know? We'll have to wait and see.
I don't know. I don't think they do, actually.
Ah, man, that stinks. So in that case, then, I would go to YouTube. I would go to the BR Football and watch the clips through there, and they probably have the highlights using the World feed as far as kind of the summary of the goal highlights. So that's probably your best bet there, JP. Good point, though. All right, second, JP says, second, on leagues going direct to the consumer instead of traditional TV. I like this if the price point is attractive, but if all the leagues go their own way, it will become very expensive for fans like myself who like to sample multiple leagues per weekend, which is four leagues per weekend that he watches, and then choose the most attractive fixtures. Might lead to someone like myself pairing back and only choosing one or two leagues to subscribe to. I was skeptical of ESPN Plus, but at least they have multiple leagues on the platform. After being thoroughly impressed and entertained by Ajax versus Real Madrid, I'll probably add some Eredivisie to the rotation too. I like Chris's idea of the leagues partnering with traditional TV to showcase at least one match per week to draw in new fans. Once everything is behind a paywall, the growth of will eventually stall or decline. Need some free promos to get people hooked. And that was one thing I experienced this past weekend too. Again, traveling around Florida for travel soccer games, is that on Sunday, I think mid-morning, probably about 3 hours before between games. So the parents, the soccer moms and dads, and I, and the girls on the team, we went to like kind of a sports bar, and I was thinking to myself, okay, this would be great to actually watch some FA Cup, but we can't watch it because if the FA Cup was on ESPN or ESPN2, we'd be able to ask the bartender, hey, can you switch on the game? Because it's on ESPN Plus. That's a no-go zone there. So good points there from JP. Bundesliga Guy says, regarding a podcast of TNT's coverage of the Champions League last week, blaming the host is just ridiculous. Completely missing the point of what is wrong with their production. Clearly not structured enough, which is why you see these mistakes by Kate. And I would agree with that in many ways, in that the production is not structured very well and there must be some communication issues. But at the same time, Stu, when he's in that role, seems to have less mistakes and less flubs than Kate. And Kate, I still respect, and I think she's world-class. But whether it's not a good fit or what's going on, I don't know. But that's my viewpoints there. Eric Colton says, what is your opinion on how Bleacher Report ends Champions League matches? Seconds after the full-time whistle of Atleti against Juventus, the guys in the studio cut in and blurted out the result from the Schalke-Man City game. I just switched off. I wanted to enjoy the Madrid atmosphere and then watch the second game. And this is something, too, that I would say, actually, I think it was on Tuesday, right after the Liverpool-Bayern game, with the commentators, and the commentators, full-time whistle, the commentators mid-sentence says, hey, the one thing about this game is that I think that, and then they cut it off and went right to the studio. That I don't like, and that's something that Fox has done in the past, which, I mean, at least let the game breathe a minute or two. NBC does a fantastic job at this, usually lets it run for a few minutes and to soak in the atmosphere post-match, because that's something we don't get to experience much as TV viewers. But I would say, as far as Eric's point there too, I think in many ways, I mean, when this happens, I mean, really, if Schalke against Man City is the second game, and then we've got Atleti against Juventus, as soon as that Atleti-Juventus game is over, I want to know, if I'm not watching, I want to know what happened in that Schalke-Man City game. So I'm okay with them sharing the result of that second game. If you're wanting to watch both of the games, I would almost mute the commentary and just watch them and record them and DVR them and watch the one game live and then watch the other game second, because you're probably going to get spoiled in some way or another, either by the commentator or by the studio guys. But I do agree in terms of them cutting away too quickly after an end of the game. But then again, they're up against commercials. They got to move pretty fast. So I see both sides with that. Monty says, EPL will never be the Netflix of soccer. ESPN Plus on their way with multiple leagues, lots of matches. A paywall like ESPN Plus should help leagues grow. EPL fully behind its own paywall will kill the league. And there are a lot of other leagues that are willing to take their place on TV. Good points there by Monty. So I think the Premier League, in many ways, it's a dangerous move if they decided to go ahead and go direct and bypass television completely. They may have to go the UEFA TV route, which is going to be that that UEFA TV will only be available in countries outside of Europe and North America, and see how it works there before they expand it worldwide. But good points there. Domingo Lopez says, the idea that I would pay $10 to watch the Premier League, plus another $10 for La Liga, and another $10 for each of the other leagues I peruse each week is crazy. I get that most of the sports leagues want to cut out the middleman and get as much money as possible, but it just sounds to me they're getting greedy and don't want to share. I guess I will be forced to go to the pub to watch a game once in a while. I'll save my $10 monthly charge for beer. Also, the math that they have hundreds of millions of viewers and therefore they could get billions per month just doesn't make sense. How many people outside the US and maybe a handful of European countries can afford that type of monthly expense? Hopefully this will drive viewers to watch the local leagues or attend more local league games. Keep up the good work, guys. So, yeah, so definitely some great points. Maybe the price point is going to be different globally. So maybe it's $10 a month in, say, North America and Europe, the equivalent. And then in, say, third world countries, it's half of that or whatever it may be. But some good points raised there. This one, Kartik, will be a good one for you. This next series of comments. We got a lot this week, and I really appreciate the listeners sending these in. Martin McCahey says, Fox Soccer execs are idiots. On a weekend with no Premier League games at NBC Sports because of the FA Cup, and fans looking for soccer to watch, they pushed the Bundesliga to FS2 for NASCAR qualifying on FS1. No loyalty. Bundesliga must go elsewhere at the end of this contract.
Yeah, look, it's very frustrating. I totally get that, and I'm frustrated by it. I'm upset that the Bundesliga is moving around. It's usually now on FS2 more than FS1. These past two weekends have been terrible. I also have to acknowledge the ratings just aren't very good. Now, if that's a matter of them not promoting the product adequately, never being committed to it, et cetera, they're just and I think – you know, my opinion is the Bundesliga is a comparable product to the Premier League, and in fact, in many cases, it's better. I now personally, it's a toss-up whether I'm watching a Bundesliga match in that 9:30 a.m., 10 a.m. time slot, Eastern time, or a Premier League match. It's also a toss-up 12:30 p.m. Eastern time whether I'm watching the Bundesliga match or the Premier League match. But for others, they've just settled on the Premier League. Is that a matter of NBC versus Fox? Yeah, that probably plays into it, but I think there's just other issues which have hurt the ratings, and Fox is not terribly committed to the product. I also think partly because they've lost the Champions League and they've lost the FA Cup, and they're basically out of the European club game now, that this is just a leftover that they're not that interested in, unfortunately. But I agree, the Bundesliga has to go somewhere else in their next deal in the U.S., even if it takes the league off of television and it's just behind a streaming paywall. That will still be better for the people who love that league in this country.
So Toby Schumacher says, I haven't watched too much Bundesliga this year, but is it now normal to have no pregame and no halftime studio show? Fox Sports cut part of its Cannes show before the game, amateurish. No studio Cannes shows. Why would I watch this over NBC Sports Gold on a normal weekend again? Craig Shapiro says, not only is Frankfurt against Mönchengladbach on FS2 this past Sunday, but Fox Soccer didn't even have a pregame whatsoever for this monumental top half of the table clash. They're truly mailing it in at this point. Such a shame. Beaver B-Ban says, I'm not into apps or streaming, finding Fox Deportes does a much better job of promoting Bundesliga games, and also has a good post-game show, including highlights. Much better than FS1 or FS2. My Spanish is limited, but I like what Deportes does. I'm glad that FS2 shows the weekly Bundesliga league highlight show. So some good feedback there from some upset fans of German soccer, rightly so. Tim Keane says, I took your advice and subscribed to ESPN Plus. There's a lot of content. As a Watford fan, I could follow our related team, Udinese, which was fun. But a lot of the stuff is really of little interest to most people, although I did watch some cricket. The most annoying thing I found is that you can't start watching the game while it's in progress. If you don't start watching it at the beginning, you have to wait until the end to make sure it hasn't gone into extra time. And like, I use my DVR, I can go back and watch the beginning of the game whatever time I start to watch it. Or perhaps I'm technically challenged and I don't know how to do it, which could well be the case. I found that very annoying and I cancelled my subscription. Kartik, I don't think this is true, though. I mean, from what I've experienced with ESPN Plus, sometimes I've joined a game, especially sometimes at the championship games where I'm just behind about 10 minutes, join the game and it's starting live and I can go back to the beginning of the broadcast. I'm wondering in Tim's case whether it may be in terms of what device he's using to watch it on. But from what I've experienced, I've been able to fast forward to live if I want to, or go ahead and watch it from the minute it is live onwards, or go back. I haven't had an issue with that. Have you?
No. In fact, the QPR West Brom match, which was this past week, but didn't mention it earlier in the show, but I was able to pause it and then come back half an hour later. So I guess it depends. And that was on an iPad. So it depends what device you're using or what maybe operating system, if you're updated or not, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I think each device is different, maybe.
Yeah. It could be user error, Tim. I mean, no offense, but yeah, if you need any help with that, just reach out by email. I'll be more than glad to help you out if you can tell me more about which device you're using and see if I can help you there. Robert Hay Jr. says, Kartik, this is a question for you. He says, based on the World Soccer Talk conversation, Kartik, do you think that Don Garber leveraged the Premier League search for a new chairman, or should I take off my tinfoil hat? And for those listeners who don't know, Don Garber signed a new deal this week to continue as the MLS commissioner, I think, for another 3 years. So he's going to be around through the next TV deal, which is going to be the biggest thing from Major League Soccer's perspective in terms of shaping the future of the league. And it's going to be a challenge. It's not going to be an easy battle. I'm sure Fox and Univision and ESPN and the other broadcasters are going to say, hey, we paid a lot of money last time and the TV ratings are not adding up to how much value that we're giving. So there needs to be some negotiation here. But Kartik, going back to Robert's question, do you think that Don Garber may have leveraged the search for a chairman or not?
I think it's very possible. I don't know if it's likely, but I'd say probably.
The timing is pretty coincidental, yeah. Right? I mean, the timing is kind of interesting. In the same week that it's the biggest story in terms of the chairman race for the Premier League, that he announces a new deal. I don't think anyone caught on to that, though, but Robert did, so that's off to Robert there. John Average Geek says, I listened to the ESPN radio show. A guy was reporting on the Alliance, this new football league, and he said he only watched it because he was at home and it was on and there was nothing else on, basically. And John says, if only US soccer leagues could figure that out. Nick says, I had some questions regarding two tournaments. For the Asian Cup, DAZN was announced as the rights holder right before the semifinals of the tournament. Was this a case of no one bidding beforehand, or were negotiations that intense that it came down to securing the rights with only three matches to go? Surely DAZN would have wanted to get their money's worth by securing the rights months before the tournament began to be able to market their streaming service and get people to subscribe. Seems silly from both sides that it came to that. So that's Nick's first point. And before we move on to the second point or question, we don't know. We don't know. I would hazard a guess, or an educated guess, is that no one picked up the rights No one seemed to be interested, and DAZN came in late into this and said, hey, you mean with this Asian Cup, are the rights available? Yes. How much? That much? That's it? Okay, yeah, we'll take it. I don't think there's a lot of demand for that tournament. In the past, I believe, I'm trying to remember who had it. It's been on a couple of streaming services in the US in the past. Very, very niche streaming services. And it's one that there's very little demand. DAZN was probably the only company that came in that was interested. And they probably came in, you mean, kind of midstream and said, okay, hey, we'll stream the semifinals on and for a nominal fee. That's my educated guess on that one. And then Nick goes on to say, I was wondering if there is any news about the English language rights for the Copa America this summer. I see that Telemundo has secured the rights, which will be a great fallback. But I'm holding out hope that someone like NBCSN or ESPN Plus will pick up the broadcasting rights as well. Any idea if this might happen? Thanks so much. So what I do know is that there, according to one of my sources, there has been interest from ESPN. And presumably it would be ESPN Plus that might be the one that would be interested within the ESPN network. Because at the same time that the Copa America is on, you also have the Women's World Cup and you also have the Gold Cup. So the Women's World Cup is going to be on Fox. You mean you got the Copa America, the Gold Cup, which is also on Fox, as well as the Spanish language broadcasters. And this summer, the Copa America is going to get kind of lost in the shuffle. So, yes, you got Telemundo on the Spanish side, but on the English language side, I would believe that ESPN is probably the front runner. But at the same time, there might be some interest from DAZN or somebody else in this one. Last but not least, last question from the listeners. It's Derek, and he says, big fan of the podcast. I was wondering if you had plans to add the show to Spotify. I've been considering my podcast there for... Karthik, you okay?
Yeah, condensing.
Okay. I've been condensing my podcast there for... just making sure you weren't, losing breath there. I've been condensing my podcast there for easily listening, and I noticed yours wasn't on there yet. If not, no worries. Thanks for all you do. Well, Derek, great news for you and all the other listeners. The World Soccer Talk podcast is now on Spotify. So if you go into Spotify and type in World Soccer Talk, you'll find it there and you can subscribe to it. We're also working to try to get us on Pandora too. So I think we're on pretty much every single podcast player that there is. So listeners, thank you so much for all your feedback. If you do have any rants, raves, disagreements, advice, or need advice, let us know. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Before we go, Karthik, where can they find you on Twitter so they can catch up on your latest happenings around the soccer and politics world?
Yeah, KKFLA737.
All right. Thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We'd greatly appreciate it. And Karthik, heading into another great week of international football, what can they do?
Enjoy your football.